It's Friday, March 6, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We want to start by welcoming Justice to the front page. No, not the concept. The Stasher, Justice. That's right. He's been promoted from the Fresh Stash sidebar to the front page of the Daily Audio Stash. So he'll be clipping some news items for us along with Mr. Spoff, and you'll see them on the front page of the Daily Audio Stash and occasionally mentioned here in the podcast. Coming up over the weekend, we've got some more of the Stash Pot quizzes. I've got kind of economic-related questions. The last couple have had to do with how much you think quality marijuana should cost in a legal regulatory scheme. Check in at 2 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday and Sunday. We'll have some more quiz questions for you. Also want to make a personal announcement. I'll be appearing on the Cannabis Common Sense TV show here in Portland Cable Access. It's also available live on the web at ustream.tv. That's ustream.tv. And just look for Cannabis Common Sense. It's the show promoted by the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, who are also major sponsors of this podcast. I'll be bringing them some of the odd stories that we report here on the Stash that don't make the mainstream newspapers. Now, coming up on today's Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, including a tragic headline that's dominating the news stories here in my Portland metro market. Also coming up, we've got our interview with Steve Bloom, our celebrity cannabis entertainment report, with a discussion about female pot icons. Can you think of one? And we've got our musical break, our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com. It's a Rap Friday, so we'll be listening to Oddballas with Peter Pan. And in our second interview segment, I'm going to be playing some audio from two different drug war debates. You know, it's pretty rare on the mainstream media that we get our side represented in these discussions. And our own Dr. Mitch Earlywine was on the CBS News Health segment discussing medical marijuana, and Drug Policy Alliance's Ethan Nadelman was on Fox and Friends discussing legalization. Some pretty good segments there, and I thought you might enjoy listening to them. The weekend beckons, so let's load up a party bowl. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. "80-year-old Oregon woman booked, 68-year-old man shot and killed by police over marijuana." As I mentioned in the intro, this is wall-to-wall coverage on my local evening news. All four of the local stations are covering it. The town Mulino that's mentioned here is about 27 miles due south of normal West Coast media headquarters. A Mulino man was shot and killed at his home late Wednesday night, according to the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. Deputies went to the home to arrest two people on warrants late Wednesday night, according to Detective Jeffrey Green. The man opened the door with a firearm, according to investigators, and, quote, "a confrontation ensued," end quote. The man was shot and killed, deputies said. Neighbors told KGW the man who died was 68-year-old Bert Henkel. According to neighbors, Henkel had lived on the rural property more than 25 years. Marjorie Crawford, age 80, was arrested at the scene and transported to an area hospital by ambulance for treatment of an unrelated medical issue before she was taken to jail. Neighbors said she was Henkel's girlfriend. Police said they had been investigating drug activity at the home since last fall, involving what they believe was an illegal marijuana growing operation. They said Crawford now faces charges for the manufacturing, delivery, and possession of marijuana. She was booked at the Clackamas County Jail after a brief hospitalization. So many lives needlessly devastated by the tragic absurdity that is adult marijuana prohibition. An elderly man is dead, and his children and grandchildren weep. An elderly, frail woman is arrested and booked and photographed like some dangerous criminal. Her children are rushed by the blazing lights and pointed questions of local news photographers as they watch the sheriff's deputy wheel her out of the jail on a wheelchair. Two police officers are grappling with their emotions as they try to imagine how they could have avoided killing a man probably not unlike their grandfathers. Wives and children of those officers face the uncertainty of not knowing how careers will be affected. Part of the public that has accepted medical marijuana and begrudgingly tolerated social marijuana now has to wonder why its police are shooting and killing old men over their pot gardens. Even those who oppose marijuana have to wonder if it's really worth shooting people over. I watched the daughter on the evening news express disbelief that her 80-year-old mother could ever be involved with anything like growing and distributing marijuana. As the economy slides, older people will feel the pinch. Many who worked hard and socked away money dutifully in their 401k just saw that money disappear, and they don't have the years left to see any stimulus package work out over a decade. I think we're going to see many more busts of older people who have no economic choice but to try to make money growing pot. Unless we come to our senses and just legalize it already, so we don't have to send sheriff's narcotics task forces out to serve warrants on elderly people for gardening. Georgia kidney patient denied transplant by Blue Cross Blue Shield for marijuana use. We just received this letter at Normal. I'll reserve my American Disease Care and Health Insurance Bureaucracy Subsidization rant for another time on my personal blog at RadicalRust.com, but I will say that my wife used to be a claims manager at Blue Cross Blue Shield, and the following story, while infuriating and tragic, is far from the worst healthcare nightmare this company has created for one of its paying customers. My name is Walter, and my kidney transplant was denied by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Georgia due to the fact I smoke marijuana. I was born with reflux disease and required my first kidney transplant in May 1978 at the age of 2.5. My older brother gave me one of his kidneys, and the transplant was a success. Now, 31 years later, the transplanted kidney is failing. I currently only have 17% of my kidney function. In January, I went to the University of Minnesota Fairview Transplant Center for an evaluation. In order to be completely honest with all the doctors, I made them aware of the fact that I smoke marijuana and have for quite some time. I also made them aware that the use of marijuana has helped me with the decline of my appetite due to end stage of renal disease. With the exception of the hospital shrink, no one seemed to have a problem with it, and even commented that my smoking had nothing to do with my kidney. Blue Cross Blue Shield approved the evaluation, but after having received the paperwork from Minnesota, has declined my transplant, stating, quote, "Kidney transplantation has not been shown to be more beneficial than other alternative treatments for patients with ongoing substance abuse. Thus, I recommend denial of kidney transplantation," end quote. Ronald Hunt, MD, Medical Director. I spoke to one of my doctors and they suggested that I contact Normal. It is my understanding most of your lawyers listed on your website are for criminal defense, but I was hoping that you may have a lawyer familiar with medical insurance claims in the Atlanta area. Any assistance you can give on the matter will be greatly appreciated. If you can help Walter in any way, send me an email at stash@normal.org with the subject "Help for Walter." We have put out the word to our Georgia area Normal Legal Committee members, and I'll keep you updated on any progress. Meanwhile, transplant patients like Walter are being discriminated against for no medically valid reason. We've already reported on the study showing that cannabis use has no impact on survival of liver transplant patients like Tim Guerin, who, with 2 weeks to live, was told by hospital administrators he needed to be 60 days clean from cannabis medicine he was using to treat his pain and nausea before they'd even consider him for a life-saving transplant. This after he was next on the list for a transplant, but like Walter, made the mistake of being honest with his doctor. While the study was on liver transplants, there is no medically logical reason to assume cannabis use would be harmful for kidney transplant patients either. Normal Legal Committee attorney Douglas Hyatt in Seattle is now defending a man who, like Walter, is being denied a kidney transplant because of marijuana use, but unlike Walter, this guy lives in a state that has legally recognized his right to use medical marijuana. For many of these transplant patients, their bodies are so weakened they can't handle powerful pharmaceuticals, and the ones they can handle give so many terrible side effects. Especially for the liver patients, their bodies can't process the toxins of these drugs. Marijuana is not renotoxic or hepatoxic. It doesn't harm the kidneys or liver. It treats the side effects of the pre- and post-transplant anti-rejection drugs and treats the pain and nausea caused by the failing organ itself. This needless cruelty must stop. The Economist. Prohibition has failed. Legalization is the least bad solution. This article has just been published in the UK's The Economist magazine, a very well-respected, slightly conservative magazine. Next week, ministers from around the world gather in Vienna to set international drug policy for the next decade. Like First World War generals, many will claim that all that is needed is more of the same. In fact, the war on drugs has been a disaster, creating failed states in the developing world, even as addiction has flourished in the rich world. By any sensible measure, this 100-year struggle has been illiberal, murderous, and pointless. That is why The Economist continues to believe that the least bad policy is to legalize drugs. Least bad does not mean good. Legalization, though clearly better for the producer countries, would bring different risks to the consumer countries. As we outline below, many vulnerable drug takers would suffer, but in our view, more would gain. After pointing out the evidence of the drug war's failure to achieve, quote, a drug-free world by 2008, end quote, as the UN's General Assembly crowed in 1998, The Economist points out, this is not for want of effort. The United States alone spends some $40 billion each year on trying to eliminate the supply of drugs. It arrests 1.5 million of its citizens each year for drug offenses, locking up 500,000 of them. Tougher drug laws are the main reason why 1 in 5 black American men spend some time behind bars. In the developing world, blood is being shed at an astonishing rate. In Mexico, more than 800 policemen and soldiers have been killed since December 2006, and the annual overall death toll is running at over 6,000. This week, yet another leader of a troubled, drug-ridden country, Guinea-Bissau, was assassinated. The Economist then explains how legalization won't be a tough sell at all in the producer countries, but it is faced with major political hurdles in the consumer countries. That fear is based, in large part, on the presumption that more people would take drugs under a legal regime. That presumption may be wrong. There is no correlation between the harshness of drug laws and the incidence of drug taking. Citizens living under tough regimes, notably America but also Britain, take more drugs, not fewer. Embarrassed drug warriors blame this on alleged cultural differences, but even in fairly similar countries, tough rules make little difference to the number of addicts. Harsh Sweden and more liberal Norway have precisely the same addiction rates. Legalization might reduce both supply, pushers by definition push, and demand, part of that dangerous thrill would go, but nobody knows for certain. However, it is hard to argue that sales of any product that is made cheaper, safer, and more widely available would fall. Any honest proponent of legalization would be wise to assume that drug taking as a whole would rise. Here at Normal, we promote the legalization of cannabis. Other drugs should require other measures that take into account the addictiveness and socially destructive capabilities of those drugs. I personally don't believe those measures should include locking up addicts. I mean, prison is a lousy rehab. But I also don't think a regulatory scheme that treats marijuana similar to alcohol would be appropriate for, say, cocaine, meth, or heroin. But when you say the word legalization, immediately people conjure up versions of Maui Wowie, Columbia Flake, Crystal Energy, and Super Smack, all sold on the convenience store shelves next to the 24-ounce beers and the junk food snack cakes. Legalization, though, can mean marijuana in adults-only stores with IDs checked for age 21 and limits placed on amount purchased, while it can also mean much more stringent restrictions on other drugs like prescriptions and pharmacies and tight controls.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
This has been a public service
announcement.
Everyone move. Everyone move.
When it gets to targets, it's
marijuana culture is infused throughout America and the world. As we round out the week, we take a look at the 420 phenomenon in movies, TV, music, and sports with former High Times editor and author of Pot Culture, Steve Bloom, in our CelebStoner.com entertainment news. The first week of March is over, and we sit down once again with CelebStoner.com Steve Bloom, the former editor of High Times magazine. And Steve, welcome back.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. I've been following your site out there at celebstoner.com, and I'm a big fan of the Toker tunes, and one of my favorite groups, of course, is Cypress Hill. So I was thrilled to see that you've got a pretty extensive interview with Be Real. Why don't you tell our folks about that?
Well, Be Real's one of my old buds going back to when I got my start at High Times. I started High Times in 89, and 91 is when the music sort of revolution started to happen in the marijuana world, and it was really kind of kicked off by Cypress Hill. You know, it's kind of Cypress Hill and the Black Crowes always looked at as the, you know, the hip-hop group and the rock group that kind of pushed the envelope on this thing and got a lot of other bands interested and involved. And, you know, Cypress goes back to being, you know, in 1991, 92, when they first came out, their first album, they became the spokesband for Normal and did a little work for Normal and Normal's behalf, and took, you know, Be Real, let's just say 17 years or so to decide to do a solo album. So he finally put one together. It's called Smoke and Mirrors, and it came out last month. It's a really good album, and so he's out there promoting it, and so I got a chance to hang out with him last week and chat with him about a variety of subjects. And I guess, you know, we kind of jumped around, but the main subjects we focused on were the California tax proposal. He said that there's going to be people who are against it. There's going to be those who remain underground just because they don't trust the system. But there's going to be people that are like, hey, you know what? If we're going to make this official, we got to pay those taxes. If we want our freedom to smoke wherever we want to smoke and possess what we want to possess and grow and all the other things that come with it, we're going to have to pay the tax just like we pay taxes just to live here in America. For the freedoms we have, we pay a high tax. And he kind of followed up with that. It was kind of a little funny line. As much as people want to be under the radar, they're never truly under the radar. If they want to find you, they'll find you.
Yeah.
Unless you're fucking Jason Bourne or something. So, yeah, that was sort of interesting. The point about Be Real is that he's a really thoughtful guy. You know, I mean, a lot of people in hip-hop, you know, are not that conscientious. And so, you know, when we got around to talking about his album, Smoke and Mirrors, you know, I said to him, you know, I asked, well, what's the album about? He said, the main theme for this record was just bringing substance. There are a lot of records out there that really aren't saying much. So more than anything else, we tried to come with some concepts and vibes that are going to provoke thought that are that thought or just make people feel something, as opposed to just talk about what you have, flaunting everything, like most songs that are out there. Look how many chains I got, how many chicks I got, how many cars I got, how big my mansion is. That's mostly what you see right now in the videos and what they're playing on the radio, what you hear. And right now, Substance is taking a back seat. With Cypress Hill, we've always come from the theory that you go against the grain, do what everybody's not doing. So that's what I decided to make, why I decided to make Substance the most important thing about the album. You know, he's just out there on his own, and, you know, we sort of commend him, you know, for doing that and, you know, for being, you know, one of the smarter guys out there in the hip-hop world and really trying to, you know, as he says, provoke thought.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that album, too. Can't wait to get my hands on it. I think it'll be great.
I'll work that out for you.
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. And you know, another thing, I have to be honest, it wasn't the first thing that caught my eye on your site. The first thing was Kristen Stewart in a pot leaf bikini. That kind of goes along with something you and I had been talking about this movement and how we're looking for, you know, someone to look to as far as stoner women, and there's not really an icon for that. Tell me about that discussion on your website.
Well, you know, we started a whole section of blogs on the site, and we keep adding new bloggers, and our newest blogger is Mama Kind, who goes by that name. She's a senior editor of Skunk Magazine. And so kind of brought her aboard to, you know, bring a female point of view. And, you know, here's an example of, like, what we're talking about. You know, we have, you know, 10 bloggers on the site, and, you know, well, we had 9 until, you know, Mama Kind jumped aboard, and all of them were men. And so the first blog piece that she wanted to write was, you know, where are all the female pot icons? You know, she says, can you think of one woman who is so synonymous with cannabis that if you say her name to someone who doesn't toke up, the first thing that pops into your head would be marijuana? And, you know, she says, casually mention Cheech and Chong, Snoop Dogg, Bill Maher, Woody Harrelson, The Conversation, to even the straightest of audiences, and I can pretty much guarantee that they'll assume you're talking about getting high. I dare say there isn't a woman out there hoisting such a sensey standard. And then she goes on to say, you know, and she refers to a lot of the different, you know, women who are featured on the website, such as celeb stoners like Sarah Silverman, Cameron Diaz, Adrian Curry, Mary Louise Parker. And she says, you know, none of them really are pot icons. They might have been seen smoking, and that's about it, but they haven't really, you know, done much more. They're not out there in the middle of this issue, you know, speaking out, doing interviews, you know, speaking at the Hemp Fest, you know, being on the Stash. You know, they're out there. And she says Mary Louise Parker is probably the closest because the first thing that pops into your mind is weeds, you know, when you think of her. And so But, you know, but is she a universal pot icon? Not yet. And she probably will never be, because I don't think that's really what Mary Louise Parker's about. She plays a great role on television, and she believes in what she plays that role. I've met her and spoke to her, and she does believe in legalizing marijuana, but she's not out there in the forefront.
I wonder if it's, if part of this might be that, you know, as a woman, that their careers are more tightly controlled, and they have more image problems to think of in the first place, just being a woman in a man's world. And if maybe taking on the stoner icon also is just more than they want to try to handle.
It could be that. You know, it's also, you know, Mama Kine had an interesting point. She kind of raises towards the end of her article, end of her blog. She goes, she says, why aren't there any true female pot icons? Research shows that most stoners of the daily variety are men, and the few female heavy consumers out there that do exist take relatively little interest in pursuing and participating in overt cannabis-related culture. The readers of marijuana magazines, renters of stoner movies, listeners of weed-obsessed music, and buyers of pot paraphernalia are predominantly men. You know, back, you know, when I did work at High Times, you know, the philosophy was that the audience out there is predominantly male, so gear the magazine to guys. You know, and I fought with High Times quite a bit on that, and often didn't win, because they were concerned that, you know, you had to do things that were strictly for the male audience, which is believed to be like an 80%, 20%. But when you really look at the more, you know, government figures, or, you know, it's kind of, the breakdown is, you know, is more of a split. You know, you think that, you know, based on, you know, what you'd see at High Times, or that philosophy that, you know, that men smoke so much more than women. I don't think that's true. I think women just keep it more to themselves.
We've been following the NFL all drug bust team, and I had joked last time we talked that we were going to get close to having a full 11-man squad. So I think we've made it, haven't we?
Marshawn Lynch got arrested a few weeks ago, the running back, all-pro running back for the Buffalo Bills. But he was found with marijuana in the vehicle, but in a strange quirk, they didn't arrest him for it. It was one of those typical stops where, you know, they open the window, and actually in his case, I think part of the issue was they didn't want to open the window. They open the window, and smoke comes out, or the smell of marijuana. Now, they found him with a gun. They did find marijuana and blunts on board, but there were a bunch of guys, and they didn't really know who to blame it on, so they didn't really charge him. They didn't charge anybody. In other words, they kind of got away with it, strangely, which is pretty rare. The latest one was Reggie Williams. He's a wide receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he was stopped in Houston, and it's just kind of absurd. I mean, just another one of those typical, got pulled over for not signaling, you know, they smelled marijuana. They did a search. They found 0.97 grams of marijuana. Can you even, like, what does that look like? That's like about your, smaller than your nail, than your pinky nail.
Yeah.
And yet he was charged with a DWI. But by and large, I just wish all the people out there, whether you're athletes or celebrities or musicians or just everyday people, would be much more careful in your cars. You know, because that's where all the arrests are going. It's kind of my mantra, is to really be careful in your cars. You know, drive with the cruise control. Make sure you have easy pass. Do things that kind of, to protect you so that you don't fall into the net. The big news this weekend is the fish reunion down in, Virginia. I kind of wish I was going, but didn't get tickets, and, you know, it's kind of a schlep, and, so I'm gonna just wait and hear what people have to say, but they're playing three shows, in Hampton, one of their favorite places to perform. They decided to go to Hampton, Virginia. They're playing tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday, and then they come, you know, they start their tour in June. So it's exciting times. There's all kinds of reunions happening, you know, with being, you know, be it Fish, The Dead, you know, coming around in April. Even Michael Jackson got announced that he's going to do five shows in England sometime later this year. So interesting stuff going on this year, for sure.
Oh, we'll keep up with it by checking out celebstoner.com from day to day and find out all the latest celebrity entertainment cannabis news. Hey, Steve, thanks again for joining us here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Russ.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoke marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoke marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit PotCultureBook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. On Friday, it's a wrap, and today's award-winning rap song is Peter Pan by Oddballas from Florida, winners of 2008 Global Marijuana Music Awards Best Hip-Hop Song. Oddballas received their award at the 2008 Global Marijuana Music Award event in Texas, where they put on a dynamic live performance. Oddballas are second-time MMA winners, having won Best Rap in 2007. The band's sound is a mix of soul, funk, and bass, laced with ghetto music. Oddballas live up to their name, not conforming to what society considers to be normal. The group combines Southern lyrics and mentality with their unique style of hip-hop, which they say feeds the soul. For more about the band, check out myspace.com/oddballas, that's Oddballaz, and registered stashers can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Oddballas with Peter Pan.
Takes me away. Said I'm tired, play my money, so you best believe I do what I say.
When we say that Peter Pan, we talk about that fire, spark up, let's go.
Shining like them Dayton's is. Shining white.
magnitude. Money's what I'm married to. It's funny how I carry two 9 millimeters just in case I gotta bury you. Eyeballers, we the shit. Shining like them Dayton's is. Shining while we make them in. Stack it like an ATM. Always on that hood shit. Green is my favorite. Color plus I'm baking, bitch. Keep it hot like Satan is.
On that
hood,
baby, baby.
It takes me away. So you best believe I do what I say.
St. Pierre, executive director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
In the past, one of the most frustrating things about fighting adult marijuana prohibition is the fact that the mainstream media wouldn't even hear us. It was so hard to get our message out, nobody would even consider interviewing us. But it seems like this year the dam has burst and there's more interest than ever from the mainstream media in having intelligent and articulate defenders of ending adult marijuana prohibition on the mainstream media to debate people on the issue. And even rarer still do we find people who support the prohibitionist side willing to show up and debate us. But just this week, we had two instances. First, our own Dr. Mitch Earlywine is on a video from CBS's health department. This is a show that's hosted by Dr. John LaPook, and Dr. Herbert Kleber is on to defend the prohibition policy against Dr. Earlywine.
What are some of the uses of medical marijuana?
Medical marijuana is great for muscle spasm, arthritis, pain, weight loss, loss of appetite, nausea, vomiting, and a host of disorders.
What is your stance? Where do you stand?
I'd like to see everyone who is ill have the opportunity to use this medicine.
So you think that medical marijuana should be legalized?
Absolutely.
Is that how you see it?
No. I'm a scientist and a healer. I treat patients, but I also do research. And I have to be guided by the data.
This is a medicine with a 5,000-year history that goes back to ancient China that's been used for these same uses for so long with literally no negative consequences. How could we possibly hold this back given all the data we have?
Is that true, Doc? I'm going to interrupt. Is that true? There are literally no negative consequences?
Absolutely not. That's an absurd statement without meaning to be disrespectful. But there's increasing evidence that marijuana, for example, brings on psychosis earlier. The more you use marijuana as an adolescent, the more likely you are to have a psychotic episode. There are other problems in terms of memory, in terms of cognition, in terms of learning.
I want to do a little bit of a point counterpoint or a joint counterjoint between the two of you. What about problems from chronic marijuana smoking and lung disease?
There's no link with lung cancer or emphysema. The coughing and wheezing and tightness in the chest, respiratory complications seem to be sidestepped with the cannabis vaporizer.
I haven't heard that all these marijuana smokers are suddenly rushing out to use a vaporizer.
Marijuana use decreases serum testosterone levels, sperm count, and sperm motility, can lead to all sorts of problems with libido. And in women, it can cause shorter menstrual cycles and also changes with their hormones. What do you say to that?
The hormonal impact is relatively minor compared to a lot of drugs that are already used. And it's reversible so that even a small period of abstinence can tend to return things back to normal.
It doesn't last, but to say that doesn't take away from the fact that something is going on by the drug causing that. And if an individual uses it over years, that is going to have an effect on many things. Remember, marijuana is fat-soluble, and so it's stored in the testicles and other organs in the body, so it's around for a long time.
One of the things I hear is that whatever you feel about marijuana use, one of the problems is it's a gateway. It leads to further addiction and use of more powerful drugs.
Many of us who've seen the data feel it very, very clear, both in human studies and in animal studies, that it is a gateway drug to more potent drugs such as opioids and stimulants.
I feel like the gateway is overstated, and if you just look at our own data, 100 million people have tried marijuana. Where are all the heroin addicts?
How do you regulate it?
I love the idea of using it just like any other pharmaceutical.
Which means what?
Go to the drugstore, pick it up, have your prescription there, and away you go.
What would you pick up in that pharmacy?
So you
3%, 6%, 12%, 20%?
I think the opportunity to have stronger potencies so that you have to smoke less and use it in the vaporizer so there are fewer respiratory symptoms is a great one.
The higher the potency, the quicker the intoxication, and I think the more likely you are to become dependent on it. We haven't even talked about marijuana addiction. It used to be felt that you didn't get addicted to marijuana. I get calls every week about people who can't stop using marijuana. There is a marijuana withdrawal syndrome.
It took a long time to identify this withdrawal syndrome, and it's, in all honesty, comparable to some of the ones we see with coffee. So I don't want to make too big of a deal out of it, but yes, there definitely is a diagnosis of dependence.
How about the pill form that's legalized already?
The pill form is legal for two or three things. Nausea and vomiting of chemotherapy, AIDS wasting, and also for certain kinds of neuropathic pain.
I'm happy that dronabinol, the marijuana pill, is available, but it's only one substance, THC. Marijuana contains over 60 different cannabinoids, and we're finding that in combination, these are a lot more effective than just the one by itself. Also, dronabinol is a pill. You have to swallow it, you have to digest it. People with nausea and vomiting aren't good at swallowing pills.
And the debate goes on. Thanks so much to Dr. Earlywine and Dr. Kleber for joining us.
Dr. Earlywine did great in that debate, and it's always interesting to watch doctors discuss it because they have this politeness to them. For a little bit of a change, let's go to Fox and Friends. This was a fast and furious sort of debate, only 3.5 minutes, but it featured Drug Policy Alliance's executive director, Ethan Nadelman, just mopping up the floor with the prohibitionist in this clip.
You know, California's got some serious money trouble. We've been talking about this. Now, one state assemblyman says the cure is marijuana. San Francisco's Tom Emiano wants to legalize pot and tax it, but at what cost? Joining us now to debate this, Ethan Nadelman. He's the executive director of Drug Policy Alliance. And David Evans. He's a special advisor to Drug Free America Foundation. So what would that do, Ethan, to legalize pot?
Well, basically, you would save $1 billion you're wasting now trying to enforce an unenforceable marijuana law. You'd bring in between $1 billion and $1.5 billion in tax revenue. And meanwhile, marijuana would barely be more available than it is right now. I mean, already kids say it's easier to buy marijuana than it is alcohol. And more kids are using marijuana and using tobacco.
David, California in particular is a $45 billion budget deficit. Wouldn't this help?
Well, I don't think so, because if you legalize marijuana and people can sell it and advertise it and promote it, marijuana use is going to go up. And when marijuana use goes up, all of the costs connected with marijuana use go up.
Like, for example?
Well, crime costs, health care costs, drug treatment costs.
For gateway
people,
drug.
Drug driving is going to be going up. So those are all costs that go up. There's also spiritual losses. You know, when you have a kid addicted to marijuana, that's a terrible problem for a family.
But they're still smoking it, right, Ethan?
I got to tell you,
whether it's legal or not.
Smoking marijuana is a gateway to becoming president. I mean, the current guy smoked and he said he did inhale. The previous guy, he smoked, he wouldn't admit it. The previous guy said he didn't inhale. Quite frankly, over 100 million Americans have smoked marijuana. It's something that huge numbers of people have done. The vast majority did not get in trouble. So, yes, marijuana is a drug. People can get in trouble with it. Young people should not do it. Don't wake up. Right. Don't wake and bake and smoke it. But by and large, marijuana is the least dangerous psychoactive drug known in human history. And that's not my view. That's a quote from the former judge of the DEA.
Now, David, what has happened in other societies when it decided to do exactly what Ethan's talking about?
Well, let's look at the Netherlands. My wife is from the Netherlands. I'm very familiar what goes on there. They liberalized their policies. Drug use went up among young people. Marijuana use went up. Britain just reversed its policy. They liberalized it a couple of years ago. Now they're cracking down again. So those are the problems. And I think that's a terrible message to send to kids, that pot smoking is the way to become president of the United States. Do you really want a message like that to go to children?
David, it's not good to have
inaccurate
information. You know, the fact of the matter is, in Europe, marijuana use went up throughout Europe, not just the Netherlands, but the countries that still had tough policies. By and large, decriminalization or not does not affect the levels of marijuana use. That's about culture and fad and fashion. What we should be doing is stopping the number of kids getting arrested. 800,000 people arrested last year on marijuana arrest charges for possessing a joint, giving kids a criminal record for life. That's not the right way to go. So nobody wants kids to use marijuana, but quite frankly, we've been more successful in reducing cigarette smoking than we have marijuana. And that's not by making cigarettes illegal. It's by a sensible, honest public health campaign.
Our approach of law enforcement and drug treatment is working. We've reduced marijuana use among young people in the United States by 24%. Contrary to what he says, that's the latest data that came out this year. So it works.
Right.
We need to keep kids alive.
It goes down, it goes up and goes down. Let's stop arresting 800,000 Americans a year. Let's bring in tens of billions in tax revenue. Let's stop wasting tens of billions. We're in a severe economic recession, just like with alcohol prohibition.
Right.
The Depression ended alcohol prohibition. It's time to end marijuana prohibition.
Well,
it's not going to happen this year, but it will be happening in the coming years.
By the way, Michael Phelps, one of the people who's not waiting for you guys to argue this out. Ethan Nadelman, David Evans, thanks so much.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a reminder that this weekend is a good time to check out the activist alerts. Look at the map on the right side of stash.normal.org, and all those states with a little red fringe to them are states where there is active marijuana reform legislation. You don't have to live in those states to make a call or send an email. Our opponents don't. Just click the map, you'll see the list of all the states and all the measures. We've got pre-written letters. All you've got to do is fill in your name and click a button. And don't think that it doesn't mean anything. Those legislators know that most people don't bother to take the time, so when they get an email, they think of that as 100 people. If they get a letter, they think of it as 500 people, the same as a phone call. They think that's about 500 people. And if you personally visit them at their office in Washington or back home, they think of that as 1,000 people who would have done the same thing or felt the same way, but you were the only one who had the wherewithal to get up and do something about it. Thanks for joining us here for the podcast. Have yourself a great weekend. We're back on Monday. And until that time, take care of each other, tokers.